Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Payne and Pendergast with
whatever,
you on a
Thursday.
It's a Thursday.
It's Boxing Day.
Reaction Thursday.
Is it Boxing Day?
It is in Canada. Yeah. Shout out to Canada.
This is when old Sethers gets a lot of his Christmas shopping done.
A lot of good deals
today.
There,
yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Smart. Your family can tolerate that. It's a good, tactic.
Seth, are you going to come home for Christmas this year? Like, no, I've got to work. When in reality, I'm like, I got to just have an excuse for waiting until today
shop
to do
on
my
the
Christmas
26th.
Shopping. Get 40% off of everything.
Do you buy your wrapping paper and stuff like that on today or in the next few days?
Oh, I'm not involved in that aspect of the operation.
I'm not either. Okay, good.
I don't even know how. I assumed it just somehow happened. I thought the wrapping paper grew itself
or something. Dude, it was so funny. We'll get to the Texans in a second, but it's the day after a debacle. So I had a handful of presents that I wrapped for Amy.
Yeah.
Most of my present yesterday was, if people follow me on Facebook, they know I do a big presentation. I get Amy a bunch of, she likes gift cards. I get her a bunch of gift cards, but I play it Family Feud style where she has to guess where they're from, and I dress up like Steve Harvey and I do a whole spiel. But there were a few gifts that I wrapped, like four or five gifts that were wrapped.
Yeah.
And it's so bad. Like, her big gift I had wrapped at the place that I bought it. And you put that one next to the ones that I wrap.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's bad. She's like, well, I could tell that one got wrapped at the store. I'm like, why? Because of the different wrapping paper? She's like, no. The cuts were straight.
Yeah.
There was a bow on it.
Yeah.
Like, mine are just paper around a tape. Here you go.
It's eluded me. I gave up on it a long time ago. Yeah. I just don't think it's... I think a lot of men especially just don't have the natural capacity to do it.
I am a sample of that.
I'll try hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just still ends up a disheveled mess.
Yeah, no, effort is not the issue.
It looks like the Texans' offense.
It does.
It's what I did. Basically, it looks like C.J. Stroud yesterday.
Right.
You know, I might as well just put a picture of one of C.J.'s incompletions on the picture and be like, oh, that actually looks pretty good compared to your normal stuff.
Yeah, Amy grabs one of my gifts. She looks at it, shakes, and goes, is this red zone failure?
Yeah.
This looks like red zone failure. Mm. Yeah. Mm. By the way, you were talking.
Did you just take a sack on this? Were you getting tackled
yes,
as you were after
yes.
this?
You were talking in the previous segment about how you went to a friend's house last night for dinner.
Yeah.
Christmas dinner. And much to your surprise, none of the places where you could get, you know, food or something to bring
every
for the
single
dinner
grocery store
was closed.
Or supermarket, at least. I mean, yeah. There was. I thought there was some place that would be open.
It's closed. Yeah, everything's closed.
Google Maps told me that there was a Sprouts that was open, and it turns out, no, that one's been permanently closed.
Google Maps, wow.
Yeah.
So they were way off.
Yeah.
They were way off. But you said you stopped at a Walgreens.
Yeah.
You picked up some fancy chocolate.
Their finest wine
yep.
and their finest chocolat.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Vino and chocolat. Jackie Koss texts us or tweets us, Seth showing up with orthopedic socks and an aluminum shower stool from Walgreens at your friend's house. What's the best thing we can get
one
from
of
Walgreens?
One of those canes with the four legs on it. Yeah,
yes.
that would have been good.
Here you go. That's funny. All right, so
my friend Bill and his wife Nicole and just an awesome, awesome family. So it was nice because I was a bachelor last night.
Good
on
meal?
Christmas night. Yeah, it was good. It's really good.
What'd they serve?
Lobster tail.
Oh my God.
Ham. Several different desserts that were really good.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
okay.
Good stuff.
Between that and the press box, that's a hell of a day right there.
And another thing, man, too. I know, like, people worry about Gen Z and everything and whatever these younger kids are. I feel like every kid I meet these days are, like, really delightful. I don't know. Like, you see the worst of everything on social media. Yeah. I feel like kids these days are actually way better than we were.
Here come the texts.
I know. I don't know, man. Like, I've got friends that coach high school and everything,
yeah.
and my Brandy coaches high school, and I go out and I watch the practice and everything. Like, these kids are good kids.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good kids out
there.
There
are good kids.
There's a lot of really good kids out there.
They get a bad rap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you on
now,
that.
Now, I don't know what they're doing on their phones when I'm not around
nice
or whatever.
To you.
But they're nice to me.
They're
yeah.
nice to you. Yeah.
yeah.
All right. So, yesterday, We usually, after a game, go through highlights, and usually those highlights sustain us for reliving from the kickoff to the final gun.
Yeah.
And we usually get on our highlight lists, shout out to Chris Santiago, who cuts all these highlights up of the game. We usually get anywhere from 40 to 50 or 55 highlights.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday's game had 37 highlights, so less than usual. The second half was quite bereft of highlights. There's like 10 in the second half. Well, total.
Well, but even, no, everything. This game, I mean, because it was in closeout mode so quickly, even when you go back and like watch the condensed version,
yes.
Usually the condensed version of NFL games where they just show each play on NFL.com, they're usually like 40 to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I think this one was like 32 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just cruise right. The game, even with that long halftime, the game was over in less than 3.5 hours.
It was. It was still a normal, normal length of a game. I know this because
that's how bad the Texans got beat.
That's right.
If you found out your team lost and it was over that quickly, it was never a contest.
It means they were just running. I mean, literally the last possession by the Ravens, they were just grinding the clock out.
Well, there were some scrambles of Lamar's that took up like 2.5 minutes of game time. There was
that's right. Single plays.
There were normal plays in the third quarter that looked like he was trying to run the clock out at the end of a game.
Yeah,
he's just running around. Oh, except no, he's actually going to throw a touchdown on this.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the highlight sheet that Chris Santiago puts together.
Mm-hmm.
27 highlights in the first half, 10 in the second half. And keep in mind, these are not just Texan highlights.
Yeah.
These are plays that were significant to the game.
Right. Yeah.
You know, long gains. Sacks, mm-hmm. turnovers, touchdowns.
And Chris wasn't
like
just like Chris wasn't asleep at the switch. I was up here. I saw him grinding.
Oh yeah, because he's
by grinding. He was like waiting, trying not to fall asleep. Like, this is so boring. Yeah.
Chris does a great job. So fewer highlights than normal, and only 10 in the second half. Totally tells the story of this game. But at one point in this game, this was still a game, and it's 10-0. The Texans are punting the football. So they're down 10-0, and they're punting the ball back to the Ravens. They punt the ball down there and get a great stop on the return. They stop Steven Sims at like the 6-yard line. Unfortunately, Chris Boyd ran out of bounds, and so the Ravens backed the Texans up and made them re-kick. And so we're all like, okay, well, great. This is yet another mistake in a litany of mistakes they've already made.
We'd already seen the D'Angelo Ross the returner with that.
Dude.
I didn't realize until I watched the TV copy this morning.
What's that?
Was that that he looked like he was confused as to why he was being penalized after he hit the returner.
He hits, it was Steven Sims that he
That's
hit.
That's right, it was Sims.
Do you think Sims owed him money from when they were both Texans?
I would have, except that Ross looked like confused, like, why am I getting flagged? Like, he had no clue that Steven Sims didn't have the ball when he hit
him. Dude, it wasn't even close.
No.
It wasn't even close. So the Texans punt the ball, get a penalty. So now the hope that you have that they're pinned deep, the Ravens, you're like, all right, well, now they're going to punt it back to him, and Steven Sims, with the way this game's going, is going to return it to the 50. Not the case. Tommy Townsend created an even better situation for the Texans.
So let's see if Tommy can get a hold of this one again. Steven Sims back at the 25-yard line of Baltimore. Townsend at the Houston 13 awaits the snap from John Weeks. Texans down 10-0 in the second. Snap on target. Tommy unloads. And this is another missile. As Sims goes back, he's going to let this one bounce, and it's going to bounce inside the 5 and hold up as it's down at the 3-yard line. D'Angelo Ross downs it. It's a beautiful bounce that it took for Tommy Townsend.
A 90-degree left turn is what it took.
Right, that's good. That's good. So special teams coming up big there.
Boy, that was a glorious moment. I remember thinking, like, this is it. This is
pins him down at the 3. I'm the eternal optimist. I probably was thinking that idiot that I am.
No, given what transpired immediately afterwards, like what did we? So the highlight we're about to play.
Yep.
You know, you and I both before this game felt like, man, if the Texans are going to win this, it's going to have to come with some huge defensive plays or special teams.
Yes.
And you know, we're about to hear like the play that happened after that.
Very next play
was a very big deal.
Very and a great example of what you and I have been talking about this week. Very first play, 1st and 10, Baltimore 4-yard line. Here you go.
Baltimore up 10-0, 10:15 to go in the second. Here are the Ravens at their 4-yard line. Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson in the Ravens end zone, set to go to work. Hand off Henry, running to the left. He's going to be brought down for a safety. Lassiter off the edge. The Texans score. The deuce.
The deuce. All right. So there you go. So you get a big special teams play with Tommy Townsend, 70-yard punt. Very first play, Kamari Lassiter screaming off the edge.
Yeah.
Tackles the untackleable at that point, seemingly, Derrick Henry.
It was a really nice play by him. It reminded me of last year when Derek Stingley, who was a young player at that point, came and he wrapped up Derek Stingley a couple times in the second
Derrick
game.
Henry,
or
yeah.
Derrick Henry, excuse yeah. me. The second time they played them, like in a veteran type of way. Like
yes.
he kind of rectified some of the mistakes he had made in the first game versus the Ravens last year, or versus the Titans and Derrick Henry. And it felt like that. Like, all right, yeah, this is our dog.
It was man. So that was cool. So defense comes up big.
What was the score at that point?
It was 10-2.
Okay.
10-2. So, but you're getting the ball back here, right? You're getting the ball back. They kick off to Damian Pierce, and we get this.
And here are two men back deep for the Houston Texans, Damian Pierce and Dario Gunbowale. Tucker blasts it. Stout blasts it, and 2 yards deep. Little hesitation by Pierce, but he brings it out. Across the 20, 25, 30, still going, breaks a tackle, 35, 40, and finally brought down at the 44-yard line, Damian Pierce. Nice return, great field position for Houston.
Okay, so special teams has now come up with two massive plays.
Mm-hmm.
In the last three plays, there has literally three straight plays in the game. You had a 70-yard punt from Tommy Townsend, special teams. You had a safety by Kamari Lassiter, defense. You had a kickoff return by Damian Pierce, special teams. Offense gets the ball at midfield at their own 43-yard line. And they work the ball into Baltimore territory. They get to third and... I say they work the ball in. Ball at the 37-yard line of Baltimore. Hand off to Mixon, minus 2 yards. Stroud incomplete, deep right to Mechie. That was one of his misses.
Yeah.
Stroud pass short left to Mechie for 9 yards, gets you to 4th and 3 at the Baltimore 30-yard line. The Texans go for it, which I approved of at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to need to be aggressive. They need touchdowns. D'Amico said that. They get what I thought was a very marginal penalty, where the play's breaking down and CJ just throws it deep to Robert Woods, and they get a pass interference penalty. We'll take it.
Yeah.
We'll take it. Now it's 1st and goal at the Baltimore 10. Mixon runs up the middle, and man, he was one shoestring away from getting into the end zone on that play. Gets it down to the 3-yard line. 2nd and goal, they run Mixon up the middle for -1 yards.
Big shocker.
3rd and goal at the 4. Pass incomplete to Mechie. He's covered. Like, covered well. Like, just blanketed.
Right. Yeah, and it was Greg Olsen watching the TV copy this morning pointed out. He kind of summed it up completely. It's, all right, you're lined up and you got all these guys and they're all in man coverage and you just expect one of them to get open. Like, let's run some crossers. Let's run some meshes. Let's do some of these things that we've been wondering about all year long. There's no options on there.
He's calling plays like Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs are still on the
team. Right. Yeah, you've got guys that are not man beaters out there.
Nico, that's it.
Dalton Schultz ain't going to shake some bro out of his shoes out there.
No, no. And Mechie didn't on that play. So they go forward on 4th and goal at the 4-yard line. Here you go.
Play coming in from Bobby Slowick. Play clock down to 20. Texans huddle up. 4th and goal from the 4. Down 10-2 with 5:39 to go in the second quarter. Big moment here in this game. Stroud in the gun. One back. Mechie in motion to the right. 4th and goal from the 4. CJ gets the snap. CJ looking. Firing to the right. Got a man. Mixon going for the pylon. He's not going to get there. Not going to get there. Tre'Davious Wright.
My goodness.
White, rather, putting up the wall. Well, and Mixon just had too much traffic on that side. Texans turned it over on downs.
And it was Washington who came across, I forget his first name, I think number 29, who just came screaming across the field to stop Mixon at the 1 yard line. That was a big game over type feeling right there. Like, you ain't going to get down here very often. I liked going forward on 4th down there. I agreed with the philosophy.
But it was yet again another instance of special teams or the defense giving the offense the ball in good field position and
entirely.
Then the offense doing nothing with it.
It was a microcosm of the season in a matter of just a few minutes where special teams, huge play. Like, punt unit, huge play. Defense, huge play. Return unit, huge play. Like, three straight plays, literally, were a 70-yard punt, a safety, and a 45-yard kickoff return by Damian Pierce. And then the offense, dinks and dunks its way, needs a marginal pass interference penalty to set up complete and utter failure in a goal-to-go situation. Yeah. That's the Texans season, especially the last 8 weeks, in a nutshell. That's who they've been.
I couldn't tell. Was it after that play that Mixon and CJ were exchanging words on the sideline?
I didn't see that. That's the first somebody, time
a couple
about this.
People mentioned it to me, so I got to watch the TV copy in its entirety to catch up on some of the drama that all of you folks at home got to see.
Yeah, well, and then what we watched unfold after that was it almost like, yeah, it was a definite wind out of the sails moment. I agree with the sentiment Mark Vandermeer had in the play-by-play, which is this is a massive moment in this game. This isn't, oh, we didn't convert down there and it's against some other team. Like, this is the Ravens. They're going to score 21 more points on you, at least, mm-hmm. the way your defense is playing. So you better get 8 points down here. You know, and I don't know if D'Amico would have gone for the two down there to create the optics of a tie and, you know, like, you're feeling good going into the locker room at the half because you're tied with the Ravens. I could have seen – he's gone for two earlier in games than that. Yeah. So I could have seen that. But it's irrelevant now because then all the warts in the Texans' defense started to show up. Very next series, the big chunk 60-plus yard play plague happened.
Henry in the backfield, Jackson in the gun, 2nd and 10, Ravens from their 20-yard line. Jackson takes the snap, he's going to throw it, and he's going to be under pressure. Now Jackson escapes to the right side, unloads to Andrews across the 40, 45, stiff arm 50, the 40 of Houston, down the right sideline, there's traffic, and he's pushed down inside the 15-yard line by Caleb Bullock. How did that happen? Jackson got free and found the tight end who took it into the red zone.
Christian Harris was put in that bind where Lamar Jackson had extended the play so long, and he's rolling over towards the right. Is he going to keep it? And Christian Harris he let Mark Andrews run past him. And then I thought, too, so this isn't an excuse for the play happening, but remember there was a report that Christian Harris was walking gingerly off the field during warmups?
I did, yeah.
Watching Christian Harris try to chase down Mark Andrews there, he looked like he had a little hitch in his giddy-up.
He got stiff-armed, but he did. You're right. And with these uniforms, you can't tell who it is right away because the numbers are so dark against the blue, especially from where we're sitting. And I'm like, oh, who's that just got stiff-armed and isn't catching up to Mark Andrews? Because it was Kalen Bullock who ultimately had to come from across the field to knock him out of bounds. And I'm like, oh, that's Christian Harris.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it comes down to the discipline of staying in your zones and staying, especially when a quarterback scrambles, once he leaves to one side of the field, that's where everything really starts to fall apart. So Christian Harris ends up there basically being the only defender on that half of the field.
Yeah.
Because other guys have also overly committed to Lamar Jackson to the other side of the field. So I'm not absolving Christian Harris. He was put in a bind there. And in a perfect world, I guess you say, look, well, if Lamar runs for 10 yards, he runs for 10 yards.
Yeah.
Don't let anybody run past you.
Yep.
But that's how it snowballs when you're facing a quarterback like Lamar Jackson.
Well,
multiple mistakes end up making one huge mistake.
Totally. Well, and this is where you realize, like, okay, they've played some running quarterbacks this year. This is a different dude.
And it's different. It's a different Lamar.
It's a different dude than Lamar Jackson, whatever version was last year. But like this year, like if that were Anthony Richardson, he's not trying to finesse a ball to whoever the Colts tight end is, right? He's probably tucking the ball and running.
He would have thrown it and missed it.
Or he would have sailed it. Will Levis, similarly. Like he probably would have put his head down and tried his hardest to get injured with you tackling him.
Last night, CJ Stroud would have missed it.
Yes.
If he had a wide open tight end.
He would have missed it.
Which he did. He did exactly that. He missed a wide open tight end.
He missed a lot of wide open guys.
No, but like the Dalton Schultz one. He was open.
He was wide open. Yes. Size 72 font wide open.
And I don't want to hear about how CJ was getting hit as he threw it. Like, he could have thrown it earlier.
Or you'd thrown it earlier, just flick it. He was putting sauce on it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that catch and run by Mark Andrews Lamar Jackson is just a beast, man. Led to this.
Flipbacks here inside the 10, 2nd down. Jackson fakes the give, and he's scrambling, squares up. How can they not get him? He throws to the end zone, caught. Touchdown, Isaiah Likely. Jackson had all day to throw.
What a play.
As the Texans could not bring him down. And they get the touchdown pass, 9 yards. Lamar Jackson
That's good. He had all day to throw because he created all day. He took 24 hours and turned it into 48 hours is what he did on that play. He's in the throw, man. If you had cashed out on the game at that point, it was still only 10-2 at that point. But if you had kind of like, credit to you, faithful listener, if you kind of saw the way the wind was blowing with this game, like, yeah, I know it's 10-2, but I'll be back for Beyonce in a few minutes. If you didn't see that play, go back and find it. Go out of your way to find it. Lamar Jackson is not only the amount of time he... That would have been a play where I would have been like, wow, even if he threw incomplete over Likely's head. Like, man, the amount of time he created with his legs.
Well,
he
and then threw
a missile.
It.
He threw a missile falling backwards.
He was like backpedaling.
Yeah.
Like, it was like that was. He had a throwaway earlier that was impressive because he was backpedaling as he threw it.
Right.
And he threw it away, but it wasn't like it was not in harm's way or anything. That one, that's the classic, all right, quarterback extends it, tight end finds an open spot in the end zone. If it was just that play, it wouldn't have bothered me that much. It was the Mark Andrews touchdown in the second half where it was just flat out like, all right, what are you doing, guys? All right, it's a classic.
The little one-yard flick pass.
I think it was a Spider-Y banana, basically.
It was getting just, some Spider-Y banana love on Twitter.
It's
a John Gruden call, for those who don't know.
For the kids.
Yeah, for the kids out there. We'll have a little John Gruden audio in a little bit. Kids, John Gruden used to be a head coach in the NFL. Now he clowns other teams on social media. We'll get to that.
Like many boomers, he didn't quite understand how to use email properly.
Right.
He was done in by his emails.
He's making a good living at Barstool now, probably. So the Texans go into the half at 17-2. So the most optimistic of us are like, all right, they get the ball to start the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at home. Seth, you know where they've played well this year? At home.
Mm.
So maybe they figure some things out. It's a long halftime.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they had a lot of time to figure some things out.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, adjustments.
You're the team trailing 17-2. This is more time to make adjustments.
They had all kinds of extra time.
Oh,
yeah.
Beautiful. And shout out to Beyonce. Lovely performance. Still trying to figure out what all the groups of people were doing out there. But it was I think I'm supposed to be confused by that. So they come out of the locker room in the second half, and they get the ball. It's 3rd and 2. First series of downs. Like, all right, short yard, 3rd and 2, just where the Texans thrive all the time. Sarcasm. This happened.
3rd down and less than 3 yards across the Houston 37-yard line. Nico in motion to the right, Stroud in the gun. Here's the snap. CJ looking, stepping out to the right, and he's going to throw it downfield, and it's intercepted inside the 40-yard line. It's taken by Kyle Hamilton, the safety, getting in front of the target. And
all right, good enough. We know what happened. And then it was Kyle Hamilton is just the further salt in the wound.
Right, yeah.
Could have been a Texan.
But Kenyon Green was probably offering emotional support.
Maybe.
People discount that, but yeah. He was there.
Kenyon apparently got in with the subs at the end of the game. I wouldn't know. I didn't watch any of those plays. Mm-hmm. But C.J. Stroud interception. Hey, by the way, that drive that ended with the Likely touchdown that we just played, started at the 1 yard line. That was a 99-yard drive.
Yeah.
But this drive, subsequent drive, Stroud interception, this only took 2 plays. Big chunk play by Derrick Henry, then this.
3 men in the backfield now, Henry, one of them, with Lamar Jackson in the middle of that diamond set, and Jackson with the keeper right side across the 45, 40, 30, right sideline, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Lamar Jackson.
He was toying with Bullock on the back end because he knew Bullock couldn't run him down. He goes.
Yeah, he did. You could see him looking back at Bullock. Who knows what he was saying to him. I promise you, people, those are the only highlights. That's it. We're done with it. But I think this illustrates this game was almost like putting a painting up on the wall of like, okay, here's everything that's wrong with this team. Here's everything that's been right with this team, but everything that's been wrong with this team. You had it all within a matter of probably like 10 minutes of clock time in the game, starting with the Townsend punt, Lassiter safety, Pierce kickoff return sequence. DeMeco preaches complimentary football. This is the ultimate setup for complimentary football in a big game. And after those 3 plays, offensive failure on 4th down, defense gives up a huge chunk play. That's been an Achilles heel. They give up a touchdown to a tight end. Defending tight ends has been an Achilles heel. C.J. Stroud's decision-making has been an Achilles heel. He throws a pick. And then the Lamar Jackson touchdown run looked a lot like that tight end of the Okonkwo touchdown against the Titans.
Yeah.
Where it's like, Yeah, like, well, Kalen Bullock's giving chase, and that's about it.
And it also, honestly, there were times in that game where you could tell the defensive ends had been instructed on that specific play to either play just the run or just to play Lamar Jackson. And you try to mix and match. And you know, on that specific play, I think Will Anderson was supposed to make a read. And he had a blocker in front of him that he just kind of ignored. And he went after the run. And then Christian Harris bit inside, too. So that wasn't a play call or anything. That was just, to me, it looked like poor fundamental football by the defense.
Which
is what happens to defenses. If you break down in discipline at all versus Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, they're gonna burn you for it.
Well, and it goes to show you the long game too. That was the first option play that Lamar Jackson kept on the whole game.
Yeah.
You know, so
they
he's
set
it
up.
Handing it to Henry. Yeah. Every time. Hey, he's just handing it to Henry the whole time. You know, they're up 17-2. They're probably just gonna play it close to the vest and hand it to Nope. Keeps it and untouched.
Yeah.
48 yards untouched. Nobody got near him.
And it is like, this is where they turn defenses into mush mentally, because they put you in so many binds and you have to make so many decisions. And if you make the wrong decision, they're going to gas you for it.
Yep.
And that was just, it was just poor fundamental. You know, I say this about the offense all year long. Like, there's stuff out there that looks like high school kids could do it better. That play right there, yeah, high school kids would have made those reads better. It was really bad.
What are we confident in this team after yesterday? Like, is there anything that happened? I mean, the offense is the offense. Is there anything that happened defensively yesterday where you're, like, looking at the postseason differently?
Okay, so they still have, in that game, they still showed an ability to sometimes stem the tide by making big plays for a sack. Or a tackle for a loss.
Yeah,
you know, Will Anderson made some really good plays
two
in that
in a row,
game.
Yeah.
Kamari Lassiter had a safety.
Yeah.
And that's who they are. You know, they're not the type of defense where you felt like they're so dominant that they can just line up and get a stop whenever they need to.
Correct.
They're just shy of being a genuinely elite defense, because they'll allow drives, they'll allow movement. You know,
and against that team yesterday,
yeah,
that's
allow
not a
passing
good
touchdowns.
To
and
yeah.
So you can't. At some point, you got to offset that with big plays, and they just couldn't make enough of those big plays versus that offense.
Yeah. I mean, special teams, I guess, but man, this offense is broke.
Yeah.
It is.
And
CJ,
that was a really, really bad performance out of CJ. You can't make any excuses for it. He showed up after a game. I was hoping that, man, CJ made some bad mistakes at the end of that Chiefs game that were on him. You know, running out of bounds and taking that sack in the Kansas City game.
Yeah.
The delay of game, like him and Bobby Slowick, perhaps to blame on that. But he made bad mistakes at the end of that game. And then he comes out, and I thought, all right, well, maybe he'll really rebound. And no, he actually just continued it and made bad decisions and took sacks last night that he shouldn't have taken.
I can't believe I'm asking this. Do you think, for CJ, this shouldn't be the case. I feel silly asking this. Is there like a Tank Dell hangover going on with him?
I think 100%. I think that's in play. Like, you can't
have that.
It doesn't. You know, look, and this is where it bothers me that some people have pointed out, like, that if you have any issue with,
I feel silly even asking.
Well,
this.
It bothers me that, like, people will say that if you have any issue with CJ crying in the middle of a football game last week, that it's evidence of male toxicity or something, or toxic masculinity. Like, no, there's not a single person. I saw so many people last week say, like, huh, people still think men shouldn't cry. There's not a person out there anymore that thinks men should never cry.
Right.
But if you're in a position of leadership, whether you're a man, a woman, non-binary, I don't care. When you're in a position of leadership, stoicism is important. There is a certain detachment from emotion you have to have when other people are relying on you. And so, yes, I do think that when somebody has an orthopedic injury, no matter how horrific it is, it's an orthopedic injury. It's football. It happens. You're in a leadership role. Be a leader. It has nothing to do with whether you're a man or whether you're a woman or anything like that. I don't care if other players, non-QBs, are crying in the middle of a game as long as they get it together. But even then, I'm like, I'm not going to crush him for it. Things happen. He's young. But then he goes out and has this performance. I have no choice but to believe that maybe there is some emotional effect from that still.
Yeah.
And that scares the hell out of me.
Well, that's not acceptable.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be mean.
No, no.
That's the job description.
Right. You have to know how to compartmentalize and detach from some of the more human things when you're in a position of leadership or you're an NFL quarterback.
And you're only paying $9 million for it now. Yeah. There will come a day when you're paying $60 million for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's like, so, yeah, it's, it, they've been outscored 41-3 since the Tank Dell injury.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard not to hypothesize, at least, like, that that is having an effect. And I'm not even talking about having an effect on the offense. Like, all of a sudden they removed him, and boy, they can't run all these plays, so they stink. C.J. Stroud looked like he was in a complete funk yesterday.
Yeah.
Sitting by himself on the bench on the sidelines, like, just, he's got to shake himself, man. I don't care what the cause is. I don't, and honestly, I don't even care if it's because he's banged up. Like, you got to, like, you're not on the injury report,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, you, whatever it is, you got to figure it out, man. You made it, you had a C.J. Stroud parade this offseason celebrating C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying C.J. has that type of personality that's me, but he said yes to seemingly every podcast, doing the radio row at Super Bowl, talking a lot of smack, too. About the Colts,
yeah.
About Micah Parsons going on podcasts. You know, the Micah Parsons bringing up, you know, how do you know what a dog is? And CJ saying, you're sitting next to one, man.
Yeah.
This is very undog-like the last few weeks.
It's yeah,
very uncanine.
Very, very undog-like.
Very uncanine going on right now. It's an insult to dogs, actually.
Which is, and it's, look, I'm ultimately in the long run, I think this could end up being a really good season for CJ to have had because...
Yes.
You know, Andre Johnson said this on the Pivot podcast a few weeks ago, and I don't want to misquote him or paraphrase it, but Andre basically maybe lent credence to the notion that these guys might have heard, they might have had a little too much positivity in the offseason because they got shellacked by the Ravens in the playoffs. And at that point, I was thinking like, all right, well, this is good because they learned like, okay, we're not ready to play with the big boys yet. We got to go somewhere. And I almost feel like the offseason acquisitions made people feel like, oh, well, there we go. We fixed it. Now we can play with the big boys. But some of the players and the younger players on the team still didn't really truly understand how hard the NFL is.
Clearly.
Because they'd had a promising season, but it wasn't like they had an awesome offensive season last year.
Yep.
To be genuinely good, man, it's a whole different level.
Yep.
And you don't have time to, you don't have time to feel sorry for yourself.
No, you don't.
Especially as a quarterback.
You don't. All right, I'm going to save this for the next segment. Maybe the most damning thing for Bobby Slowik when it comes to the Texans. I've got numbers for you here. And we'll do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln at Katy Freeway. 1 mile west of the Beltway, exit Kirkwood, under the giant American flag.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
It's just everyone executing. We had opportunities there. It's just everybody executing, and especially it comes down to third down, and we knew what this game would be. It's situational football, right? Third down, we didn't execute well, and in the red zone, offensively, defensively, we didn't play well in the red zone, and that's the game there, right? So if we want to be better and win these games, we have to execute in situational football.
Okay. Okay. We know that. You got to execute in situational football. He was very hesitant to direct, he being D'Amico Ryans, was very hesitant to direct any specific criticism at C.J. Stroud yesterday in the press conference. You know, C.J. had one of his worst games. What do you think of that? Well, you know, yeah. Everybody, and it's true, everybody did need to play better, but he's a quarterback.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's just, he can't be doing that, man.
Nope.
It was as bad a performance we've seen out of C.J. Stroud.
It was the worst performance.
In a regular season game, a preseason game, anything. There's just so many easy passes that he misfired on that there's no excuse for it. There's other, the offense is, there's all kinds of issues on the offense. And Bobby Slowik is not excused whatsoever. It's the entire operation at this point. And the problem is that it's gotten worse and worse and worse.
It's gotten worse.
Initially after the game, I said, okay, this is a step backwards. And then I realized, like, no, you know what? This is the culmination of a lot of things that we've been seeing. It's almost like it's the logical end of where they've been headed.
This was the bye coming at week 14 was, I think, in a lot of ways unfortunate. You know, that's a late bye to have. But it comes at a time where Bobby pointed out, well, we had plenty of games to look at to self-scout during the bye.
Yeah.
We can find some things that we do well and find what we do poorly and maybe try to stress those things, lean on those. This gives us time to do this. We're not scouting an opponent. We're scouting ourselves. So the hope was that they come out of the bye week an improved unit, that they come out of the bye week a better team offensively. And you were going to need to go against the teams that you were facing, the Dolphins, the Chiefs, and the Ravens in a short period of time. This is, to me, in a season full of damning things for Bobby Slowik, this is the most damning thing to me. The Texans came out of the bye week. Again, the part of the calendar where you're really supposed to be able to at least do find some things where you can show incremental improvement.
Mm-hmm.
They are averaging 234 yards per game on offense since coming out of the bye against the Dolphins, the Chiefs, and the Ravens. And I know you're going to say, well, the Chiefs are a really good defense. The Ravens are a defense that's playing better, and they're the Ravens. The Dolphins are whatever. Ironically, they had their worst performance against the Dolphins.
Yeah.
In a game they won, they had less than 200 yards of total offense. They are averaging 234 yards per game on offense since the bye. For some context, the worst offense in football is the New York Giants. Really bad if you've watched any Giants games this year. Like, horrifically bad. Daniel Jones cut bad in the middle of the season. Tommy DeVito bad. Drew Lock bad. Really bad. They're averaging 292 yards of offense a game. The horrible New York Giants are averaging 292 yards of offense a game. This Bobby Slowik-led offense for the Texans is averaging nearly 60 yards less than that since the bye week. That's what the bye week did for the Texans.
And I'll tell you the other thing about the bye week was that after the bye week, when asked what does the offense do well, Bobby Slowik said explosive plays. And like that's not actually a good thing
that
if that's
the recipe,
only
man.
Thing you can come up with. Like, tell me about all the things that lead to the explosive plays. Well, in reality, a lot of the explosive plays are just Nico Collins being a hero or Joe Mixon being a hero. It's a diet of sugar packets and cocaine. You can't rely on that. That's not, you can't take a recreational activity and say that's your diet.
Right.
That needs to be something that's like amped up on top of, you know, hey, I do everything right. I'm going to splurge a little bit with some sugar and cocaine. No, they're going into actual games being like, what are we going to do well this week?
Explosive.
Yeah.
Shots.
This offense has been a picture, the mugshot procession of somebody like what meth will do to you. You know, beginning of the season, it was a pretty young lady. And then, like, by after the 17th mugshot, it looks like the Texans' offense.
Bobby's got no teeth.
The bedraggled mess.
Yeah, yeah.
How old is that offense? 97?
No.
That quarterback's actually 23 years old.
36, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we had a caller. I forget who it was. If you're listening, my apologies. We had a caller to the postgame show last night make a great point about the explosives. Bobby's like, yeah, we do explosives really well. Well, yeah. You're in 3rd and 14 all the time. By necessity, you have to throw explosives. This isn't like Joe Mixon gets you in 2nd and 2 and now you got the whole playbook available. So this is when we can take a shot downfield to Nico. Like, no, this is, you're in 3rd and 15 all the time. So CJ's running for his life and then just either heaving it to a wide open Nico because he always gets open, or doing what he did yesterday and just throwing it near Dalton Schultz and hoping he catches it.
What's your company really good at? You ask a CEO, what's your company really good at? Tell you what, we've come out of bankruptcy 3 times pretty admirably,
pretty strong.
I think. Yeah. Every time we enter bankruptcy, I think we make a comeback, and that's good.
Yeah.
We
anticipate doing it again later this year.
Well, and Clint made a really good comment up in the press box last night, and it was after a play where either CJ had taken a sack or they tried something downfield.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, yeah, when you're trying to hang your hat on explosive plays, it's a mindset of like always going for the explosive plays.
Right.
Instead of just having a good, healthy diet.
Yeah.
You know,
and you're not that team. There are teams that are good enough to get away with, like, yeah, you know what, we're going to explosive play these guys to death.
If you had, the wide, but even when they had the wide receivers, the few times they had all three of their top wide receivers on the field, they still weren't. It wasn't consistent enough to be banking on that.
Diggs never once
looked like it should look.
Diggs was averaging under 10 yards a catch.
Yeah,
and Tank wasn't seeing the ball.
Right.
You know, yeah, you're right.
So you're right. You know, like in him saying that we're good at explosive plays, like, no, you're not actually even good at that.
Yeah.
You're just, Sean, you said it perfectly. When you're in 3rd and forever all that many times, yeah, you're going to have some explosive plays every now and then. But it doesn't solve the core problem.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Let's see. I do not think the next game is important for CJ to play. Maybe just play part of the game. He needs to watch a game so he can see from a different angle, third person, then come back to the playoffs. I think CJ needs to play. I think
mystery
the whole
injury.
Offense needs to play. I think the offense should play 60 minutes.
This is an off-season issue. Whether they make a decision on Bobby Slowick or whatever else, if they don't, you know, if they retain Bobby Slowick, it has to come with an accurate identification of what is leading to this offensive malfeasance.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's something systemically wrong. So, if they got to recognize that.
Well,
it can't be a whole bunch of like, oh, that's just a narrative, or no, actually, this isn't that bad.
You're 100% right if they keep Bobby Slowick. Here's what just the, and I'm not saying you're advocating for that, but I'm saying if they keep him, what you're saying is 100% right. If that were the case, if they do that, this is where they would lose me. So you're saying we've got to fix the guy that's supposed to fix the guy.
Right.
We're supposed to worry about fixing Bobby Slowick
while
our franchise quarterback is turning into mush before our very eyes.
You know, and some of it might be with the player personnel, and maybe some of your veteran leadership isn't as good as you maybe think they are or how they're paid.
Okay.
I mean, there's that part of it, too.
Okay.
When it comes to, like, oh, the culture. When I look at what the – because when I watch the Ravens and the Steelers play – those are the two organizations I admire the most for their ability to consistently draft just hard-headed or hard-nosed, tough football players. I feel like they've done a pretty good job of that on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think so too.
They don't feel tough and hard-nosed on the offensive side of the ball.
Not even close.
So, look, the way the offense is playing, there's multiple things going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I heard the end of the broadcast last night where Greg Olsen was given a lot of duly earned praise to John Harbaugh for being a guy that just cultivates and brings along coaches. The one part where I would disagree with Greg is that, you know, you could still criticize Harbaugh for waiting too long to change offensive coordinators.
No doubt.
You know, for years and years, we wondered, well, is it Greg Roman or is it Lamar Jackson that's keeping him from genuinely developing?
Burned seasons doing that.
Right. And they finally made a change of coordinator. And, man, Lamar Jackson is a different dude in this Todd Monken offense.
He is.
He is just the fully developed and polished package. So, yes, John Harbaugh deserves a lot of credit for a lot of the things that he's been able to do with that football team. But he probably, looking at it now, hindsight 2020, he probably waited too long to make a coordinator
probably
change.
Probably so. Yeah, probably so. Hey, speaking of changing personnel, I don't know if he can change this guy out. His contract might be too big. And he is, despite the failure of the offensive line, probably their best offensive lineman. Did you see what the vet did after the game yesterday? Laramie Tunsil?
I saw he Instagram posted something about his cleats.
He's very proud of his cleats.
I didn't have the energy to dig into why people were upset about it.
He was very proud of his cleats, and so they're autographed. I believe the picture, the post, is Laramie sharing something from the guy who designed the shoes, what Amy told me, at Mache275. And it looks like somebody signed the shoes, begins with an M, so it might have been him, the designer of the shoe, who signed it. I think here's what has people, including myself, upset about this.
Oh, he did it after the game?
He did it after the game.
Oh.
He did it after the game. We found it during the post-game show, and we looked at what the timestamp was. He put it on his stories.
Yeah.
We looked at what the timestamp was, and it coincided with when he would have been walking back in the locker room, if Instagram is correct. And here's the thing. Not only is it like, wow, the first thing Laramie wants to do is grab his phone and post a picture of his shoes. At least that's what it appears. He had the time to put music underneath. He put Texas Hold'em by Beyonce underneath it, too.
Yeah.
He had time to hit the little button to find a song and put it under there.
My guess would be it was a scheduled tweet or a scheduled post.
Oh, okay.
And maybe his brand manager did it or something. But again,
that goes
a little bit more into the tone deafness of what really matters here, man. And what
my take is unchanged.
Right. Like I don't. If it was when he was walking, like he didn't do all that, like right in the moment. But he would have scheduled it, which is still like do that before the game or whatever. It doesn't feel very good.
At the very least, olds like me envision him walking in there and grabbing his phone.
Right.
Finding a Beyonce song to put underneath.
Well,
you're right. I'm sure it was scheduled.
Look, you and I make our living. You know, we get paid because sponsors pay the station or pay us or whatever. So, like, there's times sometimes where, like, we're contractually obligated to tweet things, and it feels like, oh, this is the wrong time to tweet this, but I got to do it. The amount of money that either we or Laramie make from that kind of stuff pales in comparison to the salary of an offensive tackle in the National Football League. Like, what's your core business?
Yes.
You know, what is your core business? Your core business is playing football.
What is your why?
Yeah. Yeah. There is nothing on the offense that feels gritty or tough or right.
Nothing.
And I would say the leaders on the offense, I mean, we watched Dalton Schultz just kind of seem to lackadaisically work his way through football games. The offensive tackles do not care nearly as much about the run game as they do their PFF passing grades. There's a lot of things on that offense right now that just aren't right, and Bobby Slowick is not excused from any of it.
No.
I'm just saying there's multiple things that just don't feel right about the offense.
Amen.
And I do, and I think CJ's younger than we thought he was. I'm done. I don't need any more life lessons from a 23-year-old philosophizing about various things or anything like that. He's a young quarterback. And there's some growing up.
And that's fine.
There's some growing up that he's got that needs to be done. And this next offseason, I don't want to see it. I'll be a grumpy old man about those guys being on podcasts all the time and everything. I fought it and fought it and fought it. I fought thinking that it was cringy when CJ big broed Caleb Williams, but man, that's a cringy moment now. His little talk while he was mic'd up to Caleb Williams, saying, "Don't worry about those mistakes you made." He's got to take his own advice now, man.
No, 12 picks, man.
He's not a made man anymore.
He's not a made man. Nope,
yeah.
He's not. Hopefully they can figure something out before the postseason. All right, heading into the 8 o'clock hour. Did the Texans win an MVP yesterday for somebody not on the Texans? We will discuss that coming up next.